Mormonism 101, a book by Mormonism Research Ministries' Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson, has helped many who want to understand what separates Mormonism from the Christian faith. Mormonism 101 is available at your favorite Christian bookstore or online at mrm.org. Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
What was the SALT sermon? Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We continue our look at a history book titled Saints, the Standard of Truth, published by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in 2018, and covers the years 1815 to 1846. This is volume one of a four-volume set. Eric, we've been discussing, after going through the many topics that we have so far, and folks, as I've mentioned earlier, we do not plan on doing this chapter by chapter. We're kind of skipping around. But we've been discussing among ourselves, why did the LDS Church come out with this history as opposed to a history that they've already had in print for many years? And that, of course, is the documentary History of the Church, a seven-volume set. And to be quite honest, I like the seven-volume set much better than what I'm finding here. But why do you think the church came out with this, and who is it really directed at?
Well, how many Latter-day Saints do you think own the seven-volume set? I doubt very many, unless they are somebody who is serious, or that set was passed down from their previous generation. But I think this is more of a fifth grade writing style that's going to appeal perhaps to even millennials who might be able to sit down and read this, especially since they have been promoting it. It has chapters of it have been published in the Inside magazine, and so they're certainly encouraging it. And what you find in here is probably much different than if this book had been written even 10 years previously, because they are being honest with a lot of the ideas that a lot of Latter-day Saints didn't know about a decade ago, and now this has come out, especially with the Gospel Topics essays. Just a few years ago, they published a series of a dozen essays that very clearly stated some of the things that we've been talking about, but are kind of embarrassing, I would say. Wouldn't you think so, Bill?
Well, we have commented about the higher level of transparency when it comes to some of those embarrassing and even awkward moments in Mormon history, especially dealing with the person of Joseph Smith himself. But a question I'd like to ask you is, if you were a Latter-day Saint and you have read Volume 1 of Saints, would you feel comfortable giving this book to a non-member neighbor, let's say, who has been asking questions about your church? Would you feel comfortable giving them this volume?
I don't think I would, because there's a lot of honesty in here that the average Latter-day Saint is probably not going to be able to answer the questions that people are going to have by reading this and then asking more about Joseph Smith or some of the events that took place in this first volume going all the way until his death. But very interesting question that you're asking, because I'm not sure they really intended it for people outside the church. It's made more, I think, to conform everybody to what the actual history is according to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
And I'm sure there's a lot of opinions out there regarding the purpose of this volume, but today we want to talk about what I think is an embarrassing part of Mormon history. Last week we were talking about some of the bad decisions that Joseph Smith made regarding, for instance, the Kirtland Bank, and how the Kirtland Bank, after it folded, there was a lot of hate and discontent among members in the church against Joseph Smith. And this would continue for quite a while. Now we are getting to 1838 in the book. We're going to begin with page 313 when we talk about Sidney Rigdon and his SALT sermon, as it came to be known. Now, who is Sidney Rigdon? Let's just recap who he is. He's kind of like the second in command under Joseph Smith right now. Sidney Rigdon had an interesting personality. He tended to say what he thought, and sometimes in doing so, he could get his church in trouble. But don't just blame Sidney Rigdon. Joseph Smith didn't help any, because some of the things that Sidney Rigdon did, Joseph Smith approved of, and we're going to talk about that. And in this particular case, you have a number of people in the church who are expressing very harsh criticism against Joseph Smith for some of the decisions that he's made and is still making, to where it gets to a point with Sidney Rigdon that he's had enough of this. And now he's going to lower the hammer on these people, and he's going to condemn them publicly. And as we get to page 313, we find that there were more and more dissenters, and it mentions how shortly after Oliver Cowdery's hearing, the High Council had excommunicated David Whitmer and Lyman Johnson. Now, I know we're throwing out a lot of names, and this could be very confusing, I think, for even members in the church who are not very familiar with their own history. I don't mean to cloud the issue with all these names. It's just important to throw them in there to let you know who's involved here. And so when it mentions, for instance, Oliver Cowdery, his hearing, and it mentions David Whitmer, well, we know that those are two of the three witnesses to the authenticity of the Book of Mormon. If you open up any copy of the Book of Mormon, you will see Oliver Cowdery's testimony and David Whitmer's testimony, because they are one of the so-called three witnesses. Then there's also Lyman Johnson, who plays a pretty important role in early Mormon history. But then it says, not long after that, the Bishop's Council had rebuked William McClellan for losing confidence in the First Presidency and indulging in lustful desires. Now, what's interesting about this is we know from other Mormon historians, character assassination was not uncommon during this time. So you kind of take that with a, well, I hate to use the pun, but a grain of salt, because some of these guys, I think, had some real serious accusations. And of course, the church tried to push back by making their character look questionable.
Well, when we see that William McClellan had lost confidence in the First Presidency and had indulged in lustful desires, we talked last week about Joseph Smith and Fanny Alger. And that whole situation, I mean, that wasn't dealing with lustful desires. And then later, Joseph Smith is going to marry almost three dozen women. That's not lustful desire?
What we notice in this story, though, Eric, is what we see really today, and that is the subject of projection. Projection is when you accuse other people of doing what you're doing, and giving the impression that you are clean of these discretions, but your opponent, however, is really involved in these things, but yet you're doing it. We're going to see projection being done in this time period in 1838, around the middle of 1838, when we start reading at the bottom of page 313.
William had since left the church and moved away from Far West, but Oliver, David, and other dissenters had remained in the area.
And we should mention that Far West is a Mormon settlement in Missouri at this time. That's what it's talking about, Far West.
In June, Sidney Rigdon had condemned these men publicly. Echoing language from the Sermon on the Mount, he compared them to salt that had lost its savor, good for nothing but to be cast out and trodden underfoot. Afterward, Joseph expressed his support for the rebuke, although he urged the saints to obey the law as they dealt with dissent.
Okay, so Sidney Rigdon, as I mentioned, gets a little bit tired of all these accusations being made at not only Joseph Smith, but the leadership of the church, which would include himself, because he is a leader at this time. As I mentioned earlier, he's right under Joseph Smith. So he comes up with this sermon. It says in June, the exact date was June 17th, 1838. Now, Sidney Rigdon is pretty much known for two sermons that he gave. One of them is this sermon on June 17th, 1838, and another was what was called the July 4th oration. Do not confuse the two. They are different sermons, and basically they address two separate topics. This one deals with dissension in the church and how to deal with those that are criticizing the leadership, and the July 4th oration deals with Sidney Rigdon's concerns, problems, and discontent with the critics outside the church as well.
I agree with you that we cannot put these two sermons together, and yet I was just looking on the internet, and it seems like that is a common complaint that many people do with Sidney Rigdon, is put these two and make them the same. But I think this book doesn't really do a good job of helping us to distinguish the two sermons, because they kind of go back and forth, and they will say back in June and then July 4th, but it's back and forth. I think the average reader could get confused even by reading the church's own history book.
And I think you're right, and that's one of the criticisms that I have with this book. Unlike the documentary history of the church, which seems to flow in a chronological order, and a lot of the incidences are specifically dated, this one does seem to go back and forth like a movie. You have one scene, and then all of a sudden, you're going back in time to give you a little bit of what led up to this particular time period in the film. And that can be very confusing. Even myself, when I'm reading this, I have to pay careful attention to the names and the time period. Otherwise, I'm going to get them confused. And I'm wondering, why is this happening now? Well, it's the reason why this is happening now is because they've gone back in time. And we know that there were a number of contributors to this book, and their names are given at the front of the book, as well as some acknowledgments in the back. Now, last week, Eric, we had mentioned that we had noticed a similarity between some of the things that are written in this book, Saints, and some of the things that Richard L. Bushman put in his book, Rough Stone Rolling. Richard Bushman's name is not listed among the acknowledgments, and he's also not considered a contributor to the book. But there's another name that seems to tie Bushman with this book. So even though we might see a similarity to the book, it may not be Bushman himself who wrote what is in that book at that time, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and you're right on that. Bushman's name is not found in Saints, but we have at the beginning of Joseph Smith, Rough Stone Rolling, that Bushman wrote, that we've been quoting from these past few weeks. It has it on the main page with the assistance of Jed Woodworth. And Jed Woodworth is, in this Saints volume, The Standard of Truth, he is one of two historical review editors. So we do have a tie-in, possibly. Maybe Woodworth had some information that he included in the book here that he had helped Bushman with. We don't know exactly how that worked, but sometimes when we have been looking at Bushman's book on the same events as what the Standard of Truth is saying, we find very similar language and very much the same order.
And we would highly recommend reading Richard L. Bushman's book, Rough Stone Rolling. I think he fills in a lot of the blanks, if you will, that we do not find in this new volume called Saints. But tomorrow, we're going to be looking at another Mormon author, a man by the name of Richard Van Wagner, who wrote a book titled Sidney Rigdon, A Portrait of Religious Excess. And since in tomorrow's show, we're going to be dealing more specifically with the Salt Sermon and the history behind it, why not go to a book that was written about Sidney Rigdon by a Mormon historian that gives us a lot of interesting, I think, information regarding his person, as well as some of the things that he said in this speech that certainly, I think, also caused a lot of problems for the Latter-day Saints. In tomorrow's show, we are going to go into more detail regarding the Salt Sermon.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism.